Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is Joe Calloway, author of Magnetic, The Art of Attracting Business, and you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. Marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. Joe Calloway, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
I've got a cocktail, so I'm doing great.
Well, as do I. So, Joe, it's been too long since I spoke to you. I think it might have been 2016 when I interviewed you about your fantastic book, Magnetic, and I've been following you with all the keynotes that you give. I watch the videos. Yes, I've been stalking you. I'm sorry about that, but you know, that's the way it goes. Now, you are an author of several books, and there's been a more... What's the name of your... tell us the name of your most recent book.
Yeah, the most recent is called The Leadership Mindset.
And you've also written Becoming a Category of One, How Extraordinary Companies Transcend Commodity and Defy Comparison, and Be the Best at What Matters Most, The Only Strategy You Will Ever Need, and Work Like You're Showing Off, The Joy, Jazz, and Kick of Being Better Tomorrow Than You Were Today, Never by Chance, Aligning People and Strategy Through Intentional Leadership, and the list goes on. Now, listeners,
it just
should,
goes on and on.
That's right. Listeners should also know that you are a member of the Speakers Hall of Fame, which very few people are in, but I have had the honor of interviewing a few other authors who are also in that, including some of your fellow troublemakers like Scott McCain.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's funny. Scott and I were emailing back and forth just, I mean, literally 15 minutes ago. So, I tend to run with a bad crowd a lot of the time, and he's one of the ringleaders.
And Larry Winget, I believe, is another one of your troublemaker friends.
Oh, yeah. I also talk with Larry every day, and that's probably not a good idea. But
yeah.
Nonetheless, it's just a bad habit. I can't kick it.
Yeah, and when I sometimes see pictures of you and some of those guys together, the first thing that pops into my mind, and I may be the only one, but I often wonder, like, do the local authorities know that all of you are together in one place?
Well, not if we can help it. That's for sure.
Right. So now you are quarantined at home, and you live in the Nashville area, right?
I live in Nashville. Yeah, I sure do.
Okay. Well, because, you know, people live in Brentwood or Franklin or other places.
No, we're in Nashville proper.
Okay. And my impression is that you, like a lot of these speakers, authors, you're on the road a lot, at least based on what I'm able to follow on your social media sites. I'm guessing all of that rather abruptly changed for the next few months?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Actually, I'm not on the road nearly as much as I used to be because just a little over a year ago, I stopped doing keynotes.
Oh, really?
Now, yeah, what I do still do, or I shifted to more of a workshop format with, and normally, Douglas, it's very, very small groups of senior leadership for a company. And it tends these days to be small to mid-sized companies. I'm also doing some one-on-one coaching. But you know what? I just got tired of the keynote format. It's kind of a, you know, been there, done that for 30 years. And I got to where I really pretty much enjoyed being in a much more conversational give and take situation with clients. And so I've cut way back on the travel. I'm doing as much regional now as I can. And golly, like the whole world these days, but even before the quarantine, I've started doing a lot more online. So not as many airplanes as it used to be. And for me, that's a happy thing.
Oh, that's great timing. And I do know that your keynotes, you would still try to engage with the audience quite a bit. And I guess that still is a little difficult and just not so much so when you are interacting with a smaller group and during a workshop. And I think your sense of humor probably comes through even more when you're able to be a little more contemporary, spontaneous with the attendees.
Yeah, Douglas, I just like conversations better than speeches. Mm-hmm. the other thing is I've got whether this is good or bad, I've got a very low threshold for boredom. And I just find that doing more of a workshop or doing one-on-one coaching with somebody, it's not at all boring to me. I'm not saying the same thing over and over. You know, five keynotes in a row that are 90% the same just wasn't as interesting to me as the more interactive way of doing it.
Oh, okay, I see. And that probably explains why before we started recording, you have a low threshold for boring. That's why you said you're probably only going to be talking to me for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've said about all I have to say. So, right. But it's been great.
Yeah. Get you back on the show in about 5 years. Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
good show.
What are your friends? What are your clients thinking about? What are they asking about? What are your observations? And I ask that because this is different. We're looking for past paradigms of how to comprehend all this, and it only goes part of the way.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, to state the obvious, this is such new ground for all of us. And I heard what I thought was the greatest illustration or metaphor or whatever it is, which is that we're all in the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat. And that's true for individuals. I mean, there are people, you know, for me, Douglas, to be totally transparent, this is all really inconvenient. But not even to, on some days, it's not even to that great an extent inconvenient. But for some people, obviously, I mean, they are up against it. This is just hard. I mean, so hard. And the same is true for companies. There are some companies that are able to just roll right along, and for whatever reason, because of the nature of their business, they're doing just fine. I mean, I know companies that are even hiring right now beyond Amazon. But then there are other companies that are hanging on by a thread. And so it's the reality is so different depending on who you are, where you are, what business you're in. And as I said, that's true for individuals and it's true for organizations.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that any sense of what is happening now is going to become a more permanent fixture, or do you think there are certain changes in the past that were already underway that are just being accelerated like crazy?
Well, you know, one obvious change is just the amount of activity that is now online. And of course, everything from Amazon has blown up as far as Amazon's hiring, you know, 100,000 people. Their stock is higher than it's ever been. And so people are ordering stuff online. And I think that's a trend that had already started. I think there's probably going to be a lot of people that they're not going to go to the grocery store anymore. They're going, you know, having the groceries brought to me is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll see changes like that in my business and a lot of my friends, and certainly with you, everything's happening online now. There are no gatherings of people. And I think a lot of that is probably going to stick. Although I do think we're going to go back to having live face-to-face meetings because, you know, I mean, we're social animals. We're social creatures. And generally speaking, we like being in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there are going to be some permanent changes come out of this.
Yeah. Are you seeing examples of companies that may have actually read Magnetic as they respond to what's going on here? Have you seen some good examples of companies that are handling things in a constructive and helpful way, at least from their behavior and their messaging?
You know, the one of the core messages in Magnetic, and I mean, it's not exclusive to me. There are a lot of people that talk about this new reality of the way we used to go to market was we bought advertisements and we told the world how great we were. And now, and this has been true for a number of years, but now, since so much business is online, it's becoming more true than ever. People don't, if people are deciding whether or not to do business with me, they don't ask me if I'm good. They ask the internet if I'm good. They go online and they do searches, and this is true for every kind of business out there now. If somebody's thinking about buying Magnetic, The Art of Attracting Business, they don't read what I've said about it. They go on Amazon and they look at the reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's got 90% five-star reviews, then they're probably likely to buy it. But if it's got 30% five-star reviews and 30% four-star and 30% one-star, they're not even going to read the description of it. They're going to move on to something else. And so what that's doing is I think it is making customers much more sensitive to the incredible importance of creating a great customer experience. Because your customer's experience and what they say about it truly is your biggest marketing impact in the world today.
Yes, so, that brings to mind something from, it's often attributed to Jeff Bezos, where he says, you know, a brand is not what you say about yourself. It's what others say about you when you're not in the room. And,
yeah, exactly.
But let me quote from this other book called Magnetic. This book focuses on one thing above all others, creating the experiences that sparked positive word of mouth that will drive new business to you. It is about the attitude, strategies, and tactics that make that happen. This book is about what customers say about you. It's not about what you say about you. And I think I still see a certain number of books, maybe about branding or something like that. Not about logos, but about and you know, I want to be sensitive to the authors of books about branding, but I still find it a little bit of a stretch that too many of them approach it as if you can control what is said about you, like in the old days, like when you and I were younger.
Yeah.
And now most of what is said, I think even McKinsey 10 years ago found that 2/3 of everything said about a company is not said by the company anymore. And I would think that that number is getting even bigger. And so that then points back to the customer experience. With your experience with companies, what are the things that contribute to them finally starting to realize that engineering a good customer experience is good for their business?
Gosh, you know, to me, it's just, holy cow, if you're halfway paying attention, I mean, even halfway paying attention, I don't see how it could escape you that, well, going back to the idea of brand, if I want to know what your brand is, as you were just saying, I'm going to go to one of your customers and I'm going to say, hey, what's it like to do business with Douglas?
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they say next, that is your brand, right. whether you like it or not. Now, what you want, and listen, I'm not saying that people shouldn't advertise and shouldn't have outreach marketing. You should. Of course you should. It's just that the importance of it or where it ranks in your overall strategy has really shifted. But, I mean, I think pretty much everybody is starting to get it, that it truly is what the market says about you that drives the rest of the market either to you or away from you.
Yeah, I remember in Magnetic, you said the product is the marketing, you know, and I would argue also the experience that people have with you. And it seems like one of the biggest differentiators that a company has, and they can even charge more if folks have a better experience. And all of the studies I've seen show that people, or at least Americans, are willing to pay more for a better customer experience. Yet I still have run into some companies where, you know, they just, I don't know, maybe they just don't have that sense of self-awareness. Are there certain things that happen to companies where they suddenly realize that they do need to fix that? Like, I was talking the other day to Jean Bliss, who you probably know, and she's written a number of books about customer experience. And
yes, she's terrific.
And she talked about how one particular thing that she had seen work well is when you have the executives in the room, or you have customers in the room, and the executives are sitting around the outer ring, and you just ask these folks very straightforward questions. And one of the big responses that she has gotten from executives is, was no one going to tell me about this? Like they had no sense of what it was like to be you know, one of their own customers, or some of the friction that they run into.
You know, oh my gosh, don't get me started. That's something that I've talked about. And here's where I like to be contrarian. And I say this just to get people to think, you know, we hear all the time that business owners and executives shouldn't work in the business. They should work on the business. And well, you mentioned my latest book, The Leadership Mindset. And in that book, I talk about exactly what you were just saying, Douglas, or what Gina was talking about. I talk about executives that are so far removed from the reality of the front line that they don't, I mean, they literally don't know what's going on. And to me, that's bad leadership, and they need to get in touch, or they need to work in the business. They need to get back in touch with what's happening in the trenches. And you know, the same thing is true for the internal employee experience. There are executives that will stand in front. Oh my God, I've seen it. I've been in the back of the room waiting to go on and give my speech, and the CEO stands up there and says, we've had a great year, and everybody's happy, and this is the most fabulous place in the world. Give yourselves a hand. And he or she is clueless about the fact that everybody in that room is not happy. They don't particularly like working there, but the executive's just removed from it. And so, yeah, that's a real threat to the survival of a company, is to have leadership that doesn't know what's going on.
Mm. So what do you think that, the marketers of the world, or even the people in sales, they're all, I'm in touch with a number of them, and they're sort of wondering what should they do? Should they, in fact, I've even heard of some salespeople who are saying, is it okay to sell now? Which to me means that maybe they didn't quite understand what selling was. Like Anthony Anarino would say, it's not something you do to someone. It's something you do with or for someone. But also the marketers out there, I sense there's just a hesitation to want to make any noise. And maybe there's a few that are sort of, curled up in the fetal position. What advice would you have for companies that are just sort of wondering what should they do, particularly at a time when maybe folks aren't quite ready to buy again?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't do anybody any good to be curled up in a ball on the floor. But I want to say good job to the ones that are sensitive and aren't tone deaf. I mean, we've all seen, or at least I've seen, memes about somebody that says, oh, look, another email from a company that I did business with 8 years ago saying that they're thinking about me during this trying time and they want to help. And so they've put their products on sale for me. How thoughtful of them. And so, yeah, you don't want to be tone deaf and you don't want to be stupid. And because people are getting beat over the head with just message after message after message that says, these are tough times, but we'll get through it together. Good God. If I hear we'll get through it together one more time, I'm going to slam my head against the table. But having said that, I think it's legitimate and welcomed for people to reach out to their customers, not to strangers necessarily, but to their customers to say, how can I help? Or even better than that is to know your customer well enough to say, I've got a feeling that it would be helpful to you if I were to, fill in the blank, and then do something that genuinely would be helpful. What I'm doing is I'm trying to lay the groundwork for the business rebound that I think we're going to experience. And so I want everybody that I do business with to have a very positive mindset about me when they start spending money again.
Hmm.
And so I'm doing things to try to create a positive experience, even if there's no monetary transaction going on at the moment.
Right. Can you say more about what you think what's going to happen in the rebound?
Here's the way I look at it. And I'm also pretty active in the stock market. So and by the way, let me preface this by saying I might be dead wrong, but what I believe is that we are going to have a very strong rebound and that it's going to be fairly rapid. And the reason I say that is because we had a very, very strong economic base. Our economy was going great guns when we went into this thing. Now, I have to temper that optimism with a balanced belief that I don't think people are going to make a mad charge to go to the restaurants. I think there's going to be some people that will, but I think a lot of people are going to say, I'm still nervous about this until we get a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Step one, we got to get a treatment. Step two, once we get a vaccine, then we're really going to rebound. And that may not be, everybody can read the same thing I read. It may not be for a year or 18 months or 9 months or whatever. But I do believe because we had a strong economic base going into it, that unless the whole thing falls apart, You know, I mean, if it's game over and the economy is destroyed, then all bets are off. I simply don't think that's going to happen. I do think the longer we go, on the one hand, probably the safer it is. And on the other hand, for some companies, I just mentioned restaurants, there's some of them that are going to close up and they're not going to be able to reopen because they just don't have the cash reserves and they won't be able to stay in business.
Yeah. So you're active in the stock market. So the fact that we scheduled this for during the cocktail hour, were you able to talk to me because it didn't interfere with the watching the stock market?
Well, the market closes at 3 o'clock Central.
So oh, okay. That's right.
We started, I had a whole hour
to get ready. Okay, great.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that occurs to me about what companies could be doing, rather than saying we're going to give you, I've gotten messages from like my utilities saying, thanks for paying that electrical bill. We're here for you.
Yeah.
I just got one today. And there was another one from those, you know, the nice folks at the gas company, but they're doing, you know, what they can. But the companies that I think are really shining are the ones that are talking about their actions. In other words,
yes.
Actions speak so much louder than words. And just today, yeah. I was talking to a friend, Jamie Paris, down in Birmingham, Alabama. And one of his clients is a security, like an ADT kind of place called
yeah.
Call. It's called Call Course. Anyway, what they did is, I understand it, I may get this wrong, but there were closed restaurants and they were getting vandalized. And so what these guys did was they reached out to those shuttered restaurants and said, look, we understand your situation. Let us put the security cameras in your restaurant for you and there's not going to be any charge. And
yeah.
And then if you're able to open back up, at that point, you can decide if you want to be a customer. And if you don't, we'll just come by and pick up the equipment. But it really makes our heart ache to see shuttered businesses being burglarized like that. Or another example was yesterday I was talking to Joey Coleman, who you probably have run into in the speaker
yep.
circuit. And he mentioned to me that Enterprise Rent-A-Car, you know, normally kids under 25 can't, kids, young adults under the age of 25 can't rent cars.
Right.
For the most part. And he was telling me that what Enterprise Rent-A-Car said was, you just need to be 18. And the reason why is because there were so many young people that were away at school and needed
yep.
to get home and they couldn't catch a flight. And they said, we're gonna waive that. Just, it's not gonna be a problem. We'll just rent the cars and we'll get you home. And there's other, you know, examples like that. Like my son, the EMT, you know, we're here in the Virginia Beach area, and I've mentioned this on some other episodes. And we were worried about him catching the coronavirus and then, you know, not to mention bringing it home.
Sure.
And there are a lot of empty hotels and resorts at the Virginia Beach oceanfront. One of them, which is Diamond Resorts. I've never heard of them before, but they said, look, our places are empty. If there's any first responders that want a place to kind of semi-quarantine themselves when they're not out serving the public, you know, our hotel's open to you. Come, we'll give you a room, a suite for free for a month. You need another month? We're not going to be renting. Come on in. And it just, you know, as you can imagine, the impact it had on our family, where they just, you know, they're losing money and they have empty hotels and they just said, well, let's do something to help somebody. And so, you know, just I'm really heartened by behavior like that from companies where, yeah, they can talk about that, but their actions actually speak much, much louder. And, you know, it's amplified on social media even more than if they tried to buy ads explaining what they were doing.
Well, the three examples you just mentioned are, in my opinion, three home runs, and you just nailed it, because what happens is people tell those stories. They say, did you hear what those guys did? Did you hear what Diamond Resorts did? And that's like throwing a rock in a pond, and the ripples of that, the positive ripples of that, just go on and on and on, and they gain momentum. And so, yeah, instead of saying, is it okay for me to sell? I think the better question is it okay for me to help?
Yes.
And yes, it's okay for you to help. Now, I know that, and there's some people listening to this thinking, I don't own the company. You know, I can't give stuff away. I would love to, but I can't. Mm-hmm. I can only say this. There's no magic wand that makes it better for a lot of folks that are in tough situations. But I still think, and my mantra since this thing started every morning when I wake up is I think, how can I be useful today? What can I do that would be useful? So I've been going online on a lot of social media trying to help other people that do what I do for a living, saying, hey, here's some things that have worked for me. Here's some things that are working for me. Here's, if you have any questions about how I did that, email me, call me. And then also certainly with my clients, I'm looking for ways that I can help them. But to me, being useful, if nothing else, I'll go out and mow the yard. But honestly, it helps me to do something where I can say, okay, that was productive. Even if it's, you know, read something and learn something. And I'm not talking about this from a rah-rah motivational standpoint at all. I'm talking about it from a, what's my strategy through this thing? How do I keep myself up and going? And so for me, it's not cheerleading. It's strategic. But how can I be useful? How can I be productive? And we all answer those questions in different ways.
Absolutely. And I think what you've just described is probably what compelled me to start doing this limited time daily series. I was just thinking, how can I help? How can I help my listeners? What can I do to take their minds off of, you know, maybe a little more time in a very stressful period of their life? And the response I've gotten from the authors who have said, Douglas, I'm there for them. Please let me talk to them. And I hope it's helping the listeners, because it sure is helping me. And it really feels good to try to stay busy. Give my family a break from forcing them to talk to me. Thank you, Joe, for doing that. And it feels good to help others. And I think what you described just now is exactly what's going on for so many of us.
Yeah, I think it is. And honestly, I hope nobody thinks I'm trying to sugarcoat things. And again, be all motivational and precious with this. Honestly, I'm thinking, how can I make this better? What's in my own self-interest as I go through this? And the answer for me is, when I help somebody else, I feel better. So it's not that I'm being altruistic and being the nicest guy on the block. Honestly, it does me good. And so I don't know. I just try to let that kind of drive my actions through the day.
Amen. Amen. So, Joe, you said you are in the city of Nashville, okay?
Yes, sir.
So let me tell you a little bit of trivia about my family history, which never would have been appropriate to talk in one of my real interviews with an author about a new book. But my great-great-grandfather was an attorney in Nashville, and he fought in he was in the War of 1812. He fought with Andrew Jackson at the Battle of New Orleans. And on the wall of my house, I have a sword he took from a British officer. I don't know what the status of that British officer was when he took it from him, but he later, you know, Sam Houston lived in Tennessee.
Yep.
And he later fought a duel with Sam Houston before Sam Houston ever went to Texas. And my ancestor, William White, he lost that duel, but he lived. And ever since then, Joe Calloway, marksmanship has been really important in our family.
Well, under the category of it is a small world, the book that I am currently reading, I'm about 75 pages into the 500 plus pages of it, is American Lion, the biography of Andrew Jackson by John Meacham.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
And that ancestor of mine, he's buried there in Nashville, and John Meacham is a Sewanee graduate of the University of the South, not far from you.
Yeah.
And that's where my daughter was a senior until, and she's still a senior. She's using up all the bandwidth in the house, finishing up her studies. But she was at Sewanee and came home for spring break, and they said, "Don't come back. It's all shut down." So
we're doing 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
We can do this forever.
I'm sure we lost all the listeners, but please go ahead. This is interesting to me.
Well, one of my closest friends in the world's daughter is a senior at Sewanee
this year.
Yeah.
Oh, well, after we finish recording, I'm going to have to ask who it is, because my daughter, Emma Burdett, was the president of the student government and on the dean's list. She was, you know, basically the mayor of Sewanee campus.
Listen, Sewanee's a great school. It's not that big. I bet you anything they know each other.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So at any rate, well, listen, Joe, I appreciate you taking some time to spend, and as we say in the South, to visit with us here.
That's right.
Authors in quarantine getting cocktails, and I hope you and your family there in Nashville continue to stay safe and healthy and maybe even sane.
You know, as it turns out, we are very fortunate, because it turns out that we all like hanging out together. So my wife and my two daughters, and they're both going to school online every day. My wife is a teacher. She's teaching online every day. And I'm puttering around the house doing what I do all day. But yeah, it's going well, Douglas. Thank you. And same to you and your family.
All right, everybody. Last call.